Can the people on the phone hear us okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. And so for everyone in the room, we don't have the little microphone. If you could speak up and sit as close as you can to the phone area, that'd be great. I just want to introduce myself. My name is Kate Ellickson. I actually just started working at the State Health Department last week, so I've never attended this meeting before, but I'm familiar with a lot of you in the room, and I've been reading some of the past meeting notes, so if I mess up anything with the protocol, I'll just chalk it up to being new, and since can jump in.
Yeah,
so,
I will.
Anyway, just a little bit about myself. I worked at CDC for 7 years in the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion, so that's the group at CDC that does basically works with healthcare-associated infections. And so I'm very excited to be here in Oregon, and I'm officially taking the position of the HAI reporting epidemiologist. And so I'll be responsible for the report and also doing some analyses for other HAI-related projects. So I'm sure I'll be in touch with all of you in the room and on the phone about various things related to the report, and also really trying to make the report more useful. So we'll get into that a little bit later in the meeting. But anyway, I'm just going to kind of go down the agenda, and just the first thing we have to do is approve the June minutes. So I know Diane or Monica had sent out the meeting minutes to you guys within the last couple weeks. So if anybody has any corrections or anything they'd like to bring up about the June minutes, now is the time. Anybody?
Or anyone on the phone, any corrections, anything?
So I guess we have approved the minutes. Do we have to say yay or nay or
yay.
Aye? Or, okay, all right. Minutes have been approved. Great. So the next sort of order of business before we get into kind of the meat of the meeting is we need to nominate a chairperson. This is sort of part of the official rules of having this committee, is that somebody needs to be a chairperson. And from what I understand, this is not a huge commitment. It basically means you help run the meeting and you work on the agenda, and there are several people here at OAJ who will work with you to set up that agenda, so you're not going to sort of be on your own. So if we are currently missing a chairperson, so if anybody would like to volunteer, is this a one-year commitment?
Yeah, or volunteer someone else. Or...
Yeah.
Volunteer someone who's not here.
Yeah. Do you need to have a quorum present?
Form of official.
Well, how many people do we have, Diane? Check with me.
Well, we have 2, 4, and I believe.
There's 3 on the phone, I think.
There's 2 on the phone as
well. Oh, there's only 2, okay.
And then we have Joan and Lori, and then Mary Shanks was here.
She'll come back, she's staying.
Yeah.
Doing the party.
So that's what the total number?
Yes.
5, 6, 7. 7.
They have to be committee members.
Yeah. And she said standing in for Paul.
Yeah, but actually, that's not on the list for.
Oh, you're filling in for Paul. Okay.
He was standing in for Katrina.
Right.
So does that mean we have a quorum?
What the total number of?
Well, then, all right.
We'll work on that, and the we'll work with other people and come up with the chairperson independently. But someone can still nominate that person at this point, and we not in official capacity, but, or we can wait. No nominations?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just figure that out independently and get back to you. That's what we did last time, so that's okay.
Okay, sounds good. So sort of the next agenda item is to really go over the HAI annual report, but we're going to actually switch that up and have Magdalena present the new HAI map. So this is actually posted on the website. Magdalene has been working on this for a while, and so I think it'd be nice for her to kind of walk everybody in the room through it. Maybe for the folks on the phone, you could give them the address so they can follow along.
Sure.
And then from there, we'll talk about the report.
All right, so I think the link to the HAI infections map was shared with everyone in the announcement that went out, so I don't know how many of you got a chance to take a look at it. But if you don't have the link with you, or if you are on the phone trying to, and you want to check it out, just go to Google, Oregon HAI map, and we're the first thing that comes up, or at least we were this morning. Well, internet works. Let's see. So to those of you on the phone, our internet is apparently slow.
Is it?
It's connected.
Google shut up, though.
It says signal strength very low.
Yeah, let's try the... Okay, here we go. All right, so here we are. When you Google us, first thing that comes up, and this actually takes you to the HAI website, and you can access the map either in this, you know, kind of like banner up at the top, or over on the left-hand side here in the gutter, as it's called in the web world, HAI publications and maps. And when you get to this page, scroll down, and here we are, HAI interactive map. You'll see that there's also instructions for viewing and using the map. If any of you read those to help you, you know, orient yourself to the map, and you have any suggestions for edits or, you know, things I could explain better, feel free to let me know. My email address is on there. But when we load the map, a couple of things to remember. It seems to work best in Firefox and Google Chrome. Also, a lot of the time browsers will like open and be like super zoomed in. So if you do control minus or control negative, whatever, it kind of zooms your browser out a little bit and just makes it easier to see the entire map. If you have a widescreen computer screen, then usually once it first loads, it loads properly. So to orient everyone, so we've got our map of Oregon here kind of in the center. It's a little bit washed out on the projector, but if you're looking at it on a browser, it's much easier to see. Across the top, we've got all of the different infection types. If you click on them, it should load. All the hospitals are represented by triangles that are colored. We'll get into that in a minute. We also have the skip measures displayed and then the flu vaccination rates at hospitals. So our map is here with the hospitals represented by triangles. To the left, we have a description of the infection type that we're looking at. That also explains Oregon's, or states the SIR, like for overall for Oregon. And then our legend is below that and just describes what the triangle colors mean. So most triangles, in this case CLABSIs, are light green, which means that there were fewer infections than expected, but it's not significantly fewer than expected. Dark green triangles mean significantly fewer infections than expected. Light red means more infections, but not significantly different from what was expected, and then dark red is significantly more infections than expected. And then down at the bottom here, we have a chart that displays the SIRs for this particular infection type for all the hospitals that are in the map extent. So if we zoom in a little, you know, it changes the number of infection type, or the number of hospitals that are displayed down here. But it orders them from the highest SIR down to the lowest, so and if you hover over the bar on the chart, you can see what the greatest SIR is for each hospital. So back to the map. I mean, I feel like, you know, in terms of how to use the map, it's kind of intuitive if you use Google Maps and that kind of stuff. You can pan around, you know, just by dragging. You can zoom in here, or you can double click to zoom in. And once you zoom in close enough, then the names of the hospitals pop up so that you can tell which hospital you're looking at. Also, if you click on a hospital, a pop-up is going to pop up. And it starts out showing trends over time of the SIR at this particular hospital. So St. Charles Bend, for example, the SIR this year is 1.44. Last year, SIR was zero, or probably not calculated. This year, or 2011, SIR was 1.21. Anyway, you can view trends over time, and it is, describes that, you know, the SIR is being viewed in this particular map. If you go over here, there's a little arrow that you can click on, and it moves to another metric. This time it's showing the rate of CLABSIs per 1,000 central line days. And again, you can hover over the bar, and it tells you exactly what that rate is. Click one more time, it gives you the actual number of infections that occur by year. And then one more click gives you the denominator we used when calculating our rate. So in this case, it's the number of central line days. So I think that about covers it. Were there any questions?
I also really think it's neat. Will you be able to gather information on how many people are accessing it?
So I think our web group can do that. Okay. They can monitor it. So yeah, of course, I feel like I've been probably the one that's accessing it every single day recently. So we'll see how much.
Yeah. It might just be interesting to kind of follow trends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How have you communicated its existence?
So far, we've just communicated it to you in that meeting announcement. This is kind of our soft launch, I guess. You know, we've already had some feedback from some people on, you know, how to improve the instructions document. And then, you know, someone noticed an issue that we have displaying, you know, was one of the infection types. Anyway, so it's, yeah, we thought we'd kind of start off showing it to you guys, and then I guess it'll be featured on our website at some point.
Yeah, but I think we did send it out to hospital IPs, right?
Did we send it to everyone?
Hospital IPs and CEOs.
Oh, okay, so maybe it has been sent to everyone.
The reason I'm asking is, again, I understand sort of the test period, but you might want to think about somehow reaching out to consumers as well, who might be interested in the information.
Do you have any thoughts on avenues to do that best, or does anyone else? I would love to get more involved with consumers, but I actually don't really know how to do that.
Your consumer rep may have some ideas. Maybe working with some of the trade organizations as well. You know, for some of the different groups that are, you know, healthcare facilities here in Oregon. You know, Diane may have some thoughts as well.
And yeah, are those on the phone? Were you able to see the map and able to hear what's stated? Did you have any feedback or thoughts on the map?
This is Rachel. Yeah, I was able to see them. I think that I think they demonstrate the data pretty nicely.
Yeah, this is Diane. I agree as well. And I think, you know, I agree with Mary that I think Dee Dee might have some input regarding the consumer piece. So I would defer to you to chat with her first.
Okay, we'll do that.
And I know there's no one in the room who's from one particular hospital, or maybe there is also, but I mean, how do you think people at the hospital level react to this?
You know, I don't know that we've used this in any of our report outs at our committee meetings. It might be something, we're having our regional committee tomorrow that I will definitely mention it, maybe ask to have it brought up on screen. I'm finding this interesting, the CDI data, simply because it's still pretty new to everybody, and, you know, wondering how you're measuring up compared to others. I think this is an interesting report. I would ask how the SIR is calculated, since we haven't measured it too long. Is it just based on a year?
Something's happened to the sound. I can't really hear anything. Is something going on with the microphones or something?
I think
it's far away.
Because unfortunately today we don't have the extension mics for some reason, and so she was a bit far away from it. I think that's what
happened. Oh, I see. Okay, thanks.
Sorry about that.
But her question was about the CDI and how the SIR was calculated.
Right, for Oregon, since we have been reporting it now for, what, a year?
A couple years.
I think these here are compared to the national, is that?
Yes, that's exactly right. SIR is based on, at this point, it's 2008 national levels. I think it's being changed to a new baseline period, but that's what traditionally it has been. So.
And in the instructions, we also have just a description of what the SIR is, kind of broad.
Right, I know what the SIR is, I'm just wondering what data was used to calculate it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if there are things that aren't clear on the map, you could reference the report. Correct me if I'm wrong, it should be, all the data should be directly out of the report.
And the reports,
which everyone should have
on
now,
the same web page.
They're up there if you don't have one.
And then was COVID going to be added sometime?
Yes,
it wasn't reportable this year, or required anyway this year.
Do you guys think having this kind of data displayed on a map will make hospitals or facilities more receptive to validation activities that are, you know, where the state might come in and look at the data and figure out how you're reporting infections? Could make them more, perhaps less? I don't know if you have thoughts about that.
Well, I think as somebody who reports data, you want to make sure that if you're calling something something, that the other person is too, so you're not over-reporting compared to somebody else. So, yeah, I believe that this would make people more aware of how important it is to report correctly and why we're validating.
Does anyone see anything that kind of would be, we should change or add to this map? Or if you don't see right now, if you take a look at it, maybe get us feedback later on, that would be very helpful.
So can you click on the names at the bottom to have it indicate where it is on the map?
So you can't, no.
I think that would be the only thing that I would.
Yeah.
Because especially with the Portland Metro, they're also smooshed together at the kind of zoomed out mode.
Yeah. And so, in that case, it's probably easier to
zoom in. And if you zoom in that much, you can actually see the names, which helps.
Yeah.
So I think if that's not in the instructions, that might be a good thing to point out to people. It's just if you need to identify where your facility is on the map, you might want to zoom in until you get to that level.
And the other thing you might consider is having a link, if you can, to the HAI report for this particular metric, so that then they can just go directly to read more about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And that's a great suggestion, you know, thinking about next year's reporting. Now, I think a link to the report would go to, like, the entire PDF of this. But, you know, we could set up the report next year so that you could, like, click, and it would just go to the table for CDI or something like that. So that's a good, really good suggestion.
Of course, at least this take work to get to implement, so. Shall we go to the report, maybe?
Sure. So our next report, and I'm thinking about it. It was really nice to see that up there. Very exciting. And I know the last meeting, apparently there was a presentation by Diane Applegate on sort of the key findings from the report. And I don't know if people in the room or on the phone have had a chance to really look through the report in detail. But we just wanted to have some time here at the meeting for you guys to react to the report, give us any suggestions, thoughts about how we might improve it for next year. Is there anybody who sort of off the bat has some overall comments?
What about the kind of the different methods of displaying the data? So we used multiple different methods this time because we're kind of getting various kinds of feedback, so we thought, okay, we'll just throw all these different ways to look at it. Is there one that's preferred, I guess, would be my question.
Same kind of thing,
yeah.
If you're looking at it this way.
It's just because it'd be a whole bunch of facilities. It's, so.
But that's actually, that's an interesting point that maybe having all the facilities smushed together on one graph isn't maybe as effective. This happens to be fewer facilities because it's NICUs, but there may be ways we can, you know, stratify facilities in meaningful ways so you could kind of look at them in chunks, whether that's by region or bed size or things like that.
Yeah, I think region probably realistically makes the most sense because if we're talking about hospital comparisons, I don't think most people are, unless you have some, you know, some certain kinds of procedures, you're not going to be like traveling around the state typically.
You know, one thing I may be missing, but in the past we've had some facility-specific charts, and they've been able to provide some commentary.
There is a commentary section in here.
Yeah,
we always do that and ask for I think this year we got feedback that they want people wanted it. I think it was at the end, if I remember.
Yeah, the previous report from the beginning.
And last year was there, but some people were saying we think this should be later. So
I think it's actually the very last page. Hospital
comments. Oh, okay, so it's not by the charts, it's just treated as an addendum.
Anytime you make a report like this, that's one thing. You get various different people, like different approaches. So. Mm-hmm.
It depends what your background is. So I think if you're a data analyst, you know this is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think, for pure data, this is wonderful for the consumer. I wonder, who's going to look at this? Of course, I do a lot of long-term care, so when I think of my patients who would be looking at going to the hospital for elective type surgeries, you know, how are they going to understand the information? I'm 83 years old, I'm trying to make a good decision. So what does that mean to me if my central line gets infected? What does that, how does that impact my life and my stay? So for me, in my world, this little thing in the back doesn't mean anything to me. What means something to me for the consumers I deal with is this infection, and I noticed on the graph, you know, there was the definitely described the infections, but like in here, you know, these infections often increase the length of stay by this, statistically cause death. You know what I mean? For me, that's what would mean something to me if I was directing my patients who. Not all who are old, but if I have patients in my rehab setting, if they're young, they have a lot of comorbidities. That's why they end up in my setting. So, you know, what does that mean? What do these infections mean to my outcome? You know, why is it so serious? Why does C. diff, why does that one bout of C. diff mean anything? To me, well, statistically, you know, if you're over a certain age, it means C. diff colitis and possibly your death.
Yeah.
That's what it. So that's for me. That's what
And we do need to be thinking about that a lot, because that was, I think, one of the primary reasons originally for the bill, et cetera, to make HAI as reportable here.
Because we all know in this room what these things mean to our patients, young and old. You know, obviously things in the NICU, what that means to our babies, and what these things mean to our patients who are older or who have a lot of comorbidities, but do the patients understand?
Yeah, I completely agree, and I'd like to figure out a way to actually kind of make it useful and get that out there. I think realistically right now, the people that, if anyone's using the report, it's would be people that are in the medical settings. And that's great, and we want to, obviously that's very important.
But if we're talking about getting these things to the consumer, then we have to, you know, be smarter than a fifth grader, because most of the consumers, I mean, I can't answer some of the questions.
Well, are we smart enough to make something that that's useful for the consumer?
Right. And so that's my thought process. Because this, I think these are great. I mean, I'm taken aback by it, because, you know, the things I know about are long-term care. So when I read about the hospitals, I think, wow, that's fabulous. I'm not going there. But I understand. That's really great.
Mary, it looks like you want to say something.
Well, I was just thinking about it, because I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm just wondering if putting a simple green or red mark, check mark, next to hospitals and have a way to drill down, you know, for more data.
Yeah. Or stars.
Or stars or balls, you know, green and red.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I just would not...
What about like the green red arrows, up down arrows?
What page is that?
This is just, I mean, we have it very throughout, but this is on page 50. That one that I just opened to.
Right, whether so that you can.
So green meaning serve less than one, and red being above one?
Yeah, exactly. And then if it's dark red, it's significantly above. And if it's dark green, it's significantly below.
Yeah, you know, that's simple enough.
Yeah.
And that's the same symbology we used in the map, too.
I mean, one thought we had, the other thing we actually want to do is, along with making it more helpful, potentially reduce focus on just creating this report and figure out how to actually apply the data and to prevention efforts and have more of our time spent on that. And one thought would be to just use the website as kind of part of the report for the detailed for information about hospitals, and then the written report would be a much shorter kind of thing that someone can quickly look at and say, okay, here's how these hospitals are doing, without this extremely extensive multiple iterations that probably makes it less likely that people actually look at it. Is that, I guess it'd be good to get feedback from the group on that.
I mean, I look at this, and there is just a huge time commitment, and I think some of what people probably want is they kind of want to be able to go somewhere to get at some of the more detailed data, but again, it's sort of, you know, what are the key findings from this report? What does it mean, and where should we be moving our attention over the next year?
I want to interject, too. Looking at my data here on the KPROS, which is the page you can look at. I want you to know that we are way, way better now. So how often would this information be updated? So we identified a little issue, took care of it, it's gone, our rate, you know, our SIR is way low.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think if we had a more minimal report, it'd be a lot easier for us to do something that is more regular.
You mean like a quarterly?
Yeah, like
which
is originally the intent of the rules administrative statute is what was specifically that, a quarterly report.
I mean, we could just have sort of an executive summary
that's
quarterly. I mean, it does seem like it, I mean, this kind of data lends itself to, having kind of the summarized data and then maybe, you know, links to this data, either like links to a table.
I mean, it's almost as if, you know, maybe the frequent reporting synopsis, but also focus on those who are doing really well and those who need to improve, and kind of figure out, again, the directions that, you you know, other facilities can take, sort of the lessons learned and that type of thing. You know, because again, I think you do, especially for those that, you know, it's kind of an integrity issue in some ways. Consumers, I think, are looking at this group to identify facilities that are struggling. You know, so there's kind of that obligation to somehow report or share that.
I mean, I think we could also say, I mean, honestly, since I've talked about this too, I mean, if you're not dark red, then, you know, there's a possibility that this finding is due to chance. You know, I mean, your SIR is greater than zero, it's not statistically significant. So I think maybe the obligation falls more like when we know with a fair amount of certainty that this SIR is less than one. I'm not saying we shouldn't report this, but I would shy away from emphasizing, like, from just having a, you know, these are the bad hospitals and have a list of people that have light red triangles, because I think that's, you're skating on thin ice, you know.
This is what I really, really wouldn't like to see, is red triangles based on, you know, one quarter or two quarters worth of data.
Yeah. Well, I think as we get further on, we can emphasize, you know, look at trends and really hopefully some of that stuff it'll smooth out if there's just one.
Yeah, well, if we posted quarterly, I mean, up until now, we've given hospitals a chance to provide feedback on their data. So, well, that would become your whole job if we did this quarterly, or I mean, what kind of level of...
Yeah, you'd have to really trim down, I think, on the data. I'm not sure we could do it in the next year. It might be like, we'll see how we can trim it down for next year's report in terms of the summary, and then see at that point, you know, maybe make that our starting point for considering whether it's
important. That's a good point.
But yeah, I mean, I was also thinking in terms of, we have sort of the consumers and the people at the hospital level are looking at their own data, but then it also seems like there's sort of a third party who uses data, and that's kind of, you know, people in this room, this committee, and maybe policymakers were really looking, you know, in terms of directing resources more effectively. And so one thing I'd like to do over the next year is really kind of collect information about what's going on the prevention side, so in all settings, long-term care and acute care and ASCs, because I think it would be really nice to look at some of this data, even in a sort of an executive summary format, kind of in concert with what's going on prevention-wise. So we can say, well, it looks like this is sort of a problem. What are the prevention efforts we have in state? And that's sort of one thing I'd like to work on in the next year. So I don't know if people have thoughts about sort of how that could be done, open and receptive. But,
and maybe even best practices.
Best practices, yeah, for the one where we're seeing.
Are there any thoughts on the phone? Just wanted to check in periodically with both of you.
So I guess if there are further comments on the report, we're definitely receptive here, and I'm going to start working on this probably, you know, pretty soon for the next year. So I might be reaching out to you guys for further opinions and pilot tests and just data displays and stuff. So I guess now we're going to move on to some updates. So Mary, do you want to?
Sure. And I apologize to those on the phone who won't be able to see the slides, but we will do the best we can to verbally share the important information with you. This is the report from the Oregon Patient Safety Commission, and I first will be talking about the Oregon Stop UTI Initiatives, which is a new grant-funded, we actually have two grant-funded projects that we're working on with long-term care facilities here in Oregon. And then Jessica will go ahead and share some updated information on the multi-drug-resistant organism prevention collaboratives. The Oregon Stop UTI Initiatives are two separate grants that are working together. The first one is actually funded by AHRQ. And we are calling it the AHRQ Long-Term Care Collaborative. The second grant fund is funded by the Department of Health and Human Services here in Oregon, and we are calling this the Portland Metro Collaborative pilot. They are working in synergy with each other. If you are a member of the collaborative,
Actually, if you're a member of the pilot, you are also a member of the collaborative. So all participants will be in the collaborative. The goals of the projects are obviously to reduce UTIs, to improve resident safety culture, and to improve infection prevention skills among the nursing facility staff. Secondary project benefits, though, are anticipated to improve antibiotic prescribing patterns, to reduce hospital readmissions, to reduce resident morbidity and mortality, to improve relations with hospital referral partners, and to reduce regulatory penalties, and to improve resident and family satisfaction. In terms of the AHRQ Long-Term Care Collaborative, it's a structured learning collaborative to address urinary tract infection prevention, very focused on CAUTI, catheter-associated urinary tract infection prevention. It is being funded again by AHRQ, but facilitated by the Health Research and Educational Trust, or HRET. It consists of in-person meetings, webinars, conference calls, and shared learning across the facilities. The commission is actually in the second cohort group, and this again is a national initiative. Unfortunately, those on the phone line cannot see the states that are participating and the lead organizations from each state, but there are 9 states that are participating in the second cohort group. And again, on the slides, you can see that from these 9 states, there are 182 nursing facilities that are participating. Tennessee Healthcare Association has the largest number with 36. The Oregon Patient Safety Commission is pretty much in the middle with 19 participating facilities. You can see here the list of Oregon facilities that are participating. We're really pleased because we have a good group that represents a lot of our facilities here in the state. We have Avamere facilities, 4 facilities participating that are Avamere. We have 4 facilities from Marquee, 2 from Pinnacle, 3 from Prestige. We have Providence Health and Services, the Ben Dicting Nursing Service. We have Baycrest Village in Coos Bay. And then we have 4 independent facilities, Clatsop Care, Mennonite Home, Robinson Jewish, and Presbyterian Community Care Center. I want to point out that the independents, Clatsop Care, and Presbyterian are actually rural. Clatsop Care is in Astoria, and Presbyterian is all the way in Ontario. So we were really pleased that we were able to have them participate. We are representing 19 facilities, 14 corporate for-profit facilities, 3 nonprofit, 1 government hospital district facility, and 1 that is a church-related nonprofit. The collaborative has 1,735 certified beds. On average, it's not just a little under 1,200 residents per day in terms of their annual occupancy rate. And it's going to be a little bit more, probably approaching 2,000 total staff members working more than 8 hours per day. So again, I think the reach that we will have in terms of our improvement efforts will be great. The second grant we have is the Portland Metro Collaborative pilot. This again was funded by Quality Friends from Oregon and the Department of Health and Human Services. It's acting as a complement to the collaborative. Teams that are enrolled in this group are also part of the collaborative. We are able to offer a lot more hands-on, on-site support for the facilities that are in the pilot group. They will go ahead and will be piloting and implementing urinary tract infection prevention tools that we are designing. They also will be receiving, again, the consultation and support in terms of their infection prevention programs, some in-servicing, and they are being required to enroll and use NHSN for reporting and using their CAUTI prevention module. Because of the time that's involved with the on-site support, we were only able to offer this option to the metro area facilities. Unfortunately, those on the call cannot see the chart, but we basically have 19 facilities participating in the collaborative. Of those 19, 11 are participating in the pilot group, and we're really thrilled, but we were able to have 17 of our 19 facilities indicate that they do want to and are willing to enroll in NHSN. So we're really thrilled about that. It'll be our first long-term care facilities using NHSN. And we are able to offer more extensive training and support to have them involved. We're having additional webinars to help them learn how to use the modules. And we also are working on additional tools to help simplify NHSN in the long-term care facility settings. A lot of times, the physicians don't round every day, and there is not clear, easily obtained medical documentation for some of the things that fulfill the criteria that you need to look for when you're doing surveillance for UTIs. So we're coming up with some tools to help communicate between doctor's offices and nursing facilities to help capture some of the criteria that they're going to be needing for surveillance. So we're trying to do some innovative things like that. Plus, the language in hospitals is a little different from the language in long-term care facilities. And again, without the access to the medical documentation, we're trying to simplify and provide more resources for the UTI surveillance. This is just a diagram of the timelines that we have. It's been very busy. The first several months are basically our onboarding, where they're learning, all our facilities are learning about the projects and are learning and becoming enrolled in NHSN. Come November, we really start a lot of additional training for them. We will be going on site and doing our pilot support and consultation. And the projects, the quality fund and the pilot fund is currently funded through the end of June. We're hoping again that we will receive an additional year of funding, if not two. And then the AHRQ project for this cohort group two will continue through the end of October. We did have our first learning session. Again, it was a very rapid kickoff. It was held the first week in September. We had 33 individuals come from 16 of the 19 participating facilities. So we're very pleased with that.
Can I say an aside note? Mm-hmm. So Ontario, the group that's, right, they signed on late, so they weren't actually registered prior to that learning session.
Right.
So really it's 16 out of 18.
Right. 16 of 18 were able to come. So. And then we also, as part of the grant funding for state, we were funded to provide two statewide training sessions for the nursing facilities that will be open to everybody. We're planning right now to offer one in the metro area and one in Eugene. Those will be happening sometime after March of this year. Any questions?
As part of your training, are you including urine collection and handling of the specimens? We have found that in the hospital setting to be problematic if the specimen is left sitting, that kind of thing.
Right.
So you can get some false positives, and you know, obviously it drives a lot of antibiotic use. So that's something that we're working at the hospital level to improve clinical knowledge of the indications for a specimen, and then how to collect it and how to get it to the lab. And I know that there's issues related to transportation of specimens to laboratories.
We are working on tools to address such issues, such as the algorithms for when a resident is reliable, if you will, for clean catches versus when you maybe need to consider a straight cap. And yes, tools to ensure we have appropriate handling and transport of the specimens. So all those things will be a part of it. There is a bundle that has been developed for CODI in long-term care that, again, is a focus of this initiative. And even though within each of the bundle elements, there's a lot of things that need to be considered, there will be additional tools not only developed by our groups and piloted, but also nationally with AHRQ.
I was wondering if you have, in terms of getting facilities on board with NHSN, what challenges you were facing, and if you have recommendations for other initiatives like that?
Yeah, well, we actually connected with a couple other states that had state efforts in enrolling NHSN, and so we're trying to pull upon their lessons learned. One of the things they really mentioned is that you have to break it up into steps. So at this point, we've had one webinar, which was basically about getting started and enrolling in NHSN. And so we broke it down. It's a new process. It's no longer digital certificates. It's the new SAMS. There's a whole identity verification process that goes into that. So again, we'll have better feedback probably in a couple months for how it went, because they do need to initiate data collection in November. But between now and the middle of October, we have a lot of training and steps and things that we're asking them to do, but we are communicating on a weekly basis right now with them and giving them broken down steps about what they need to do and where they should be. Anything else, Tan, Jess?
To the NHSN piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming. No, it's fine. It is something, like Mary said, a lot of the feedback we got from other states was really to make it digestible. I think one of the benefits for us right now is because we are working in this closed system where we have a specific number of facilities that we're supporting, we can offer that one-on-one support with them to really get them enrolled. So that's really in our favor. And with the AHRQ project, they specifically have two different modules you can follow. Either you can report via NHSN, or they have this comprehensive data system platform you can use. So they have to use one or the other, and those that are opting to participate in the pilot have to use NHSN. So it's kind of, we've kind of put it in that frame, I guess, if you will, but we haven't really enrolled anyone actually into NHSN yet, so more to come.
But you get a sense that they're open and interested, or at least some of them are.
They are. To be honest, we had kind of the carrot stick of you'll be receiving on-site support and consultation as an incentive. And then we also were very clear that down the road at some point, we know that long-term care facilities will be required to use NHSN. So we're encouraging them to go ahead and get experience to help the nation learn what will be effective. You know, it's an opportunity again to provide feedback on the modules and some of the definitions and kind of shape what the future will look like. And I think a lot of the facilities were interested in participating in that and trying it. So.
And I will say too, when we went to that first learning session, I was really ready to hear a lot of like gasps and just like resistance about it as we explained what it was. And we really didn't get a lot of that. I think these people really want to change things. So they seem like they're ready to do it.
Yeah. We were a little selective in our recruiting also. We know we needed to have facilities that are kind of go-getters and are going to be able to complete the project so that we can learn from them. So, you know, again, if we were talking about what's the response of the 140 some odd long-term care facilities, it may be a different experience than what we're seeing and experiencing right now.
So, Mary, of those facilities that you chose, so obviously some of them are part of larger corporations. Mm-hmm. So was it, did you go to the corporations and say, okay, this is what we'd like to see everybody enrolled in NHSN, or was it that you worked with those facilities individually? Because, I mean, I know myself across our company that we have that whole varied. I mean, you'll see some of our facilities, depending upon, you know, who's there. Some of us are very progressive, and other facilities, you know, oh, they don't want to have to do anything new. Our company, I would say, you know, it is more progressive, but, you know, when you have 220 facilities, then you're going to have employees that don't want to do that. But did you approach then from the corporate level and say, how do you feel about having all of your facilities participate in this?
Yeah, we used a couple different mechanisms. We have had experience working in collaboratives with a couple of the facilities, so we certainly gave them an opportunity, reached out to them. We also did work, we kind of looked at some of the larger corporations and who especially was in the metro area, reached out to some of the regional leaders to ask them to, again, help us identify facilities that, you know, would again, really be a good fit for this collaborative project. And then there were some, you know, we just really wanted to kind of, again, get the best representation of independents, large and small. So we tried to kind of look at who was enrolled and maybe where else we could fill a gap so that we've got good representation across the state.
I certainly know when I get the corporate directive that we're going to do this as a company, then, you know, then it happens.
Yeah.
I only have so much time to drag my feet before...
Right. Yeah.
That
well, I know HRQ will be doing 6 cohorts. They're doing 2 a year. So I think, again, there's a likelihood that next year we'll be able to work with them again with maybe a new cohort group. And again, the messaging we're hoping is that this year we're building a group and providing them with skills to help be mentors for future teams so that we can kind of build again the overall infection prevention infrastructure here in this state.
I was wondering, do all these facilities have the technology available to do this?
You know, we have yet to find a facility that does not have internet access. You know, I think some of the limitations, unfortunately, we know we're going to find is turnover. And I think that's one of the things. NHSN access alone takes time and training. And so, as much as possible, we're really encouraging facilities to be at least 2-person deep so that if for some reason somebody has to leave, there's somebody who will retain that knowledge. And again, that's the message we're really trying to share also with the corporations and chains and some of their sister facilities to really think at least 2 deep. Okay. So, I think.
Okay. So Mary had a PowerPoint. I just handed out a one pager. I'll move closer to the mic. And for those of you online, again, sorry that you don't have this, but I'm actually going to just walk through it. So I don't think you'll miss anything by not having this in front of you. But what I want to talk about right now is the regional MDR prevention collaboratives that ran from August 1st through July 31st. I did want to say up front that I was collaborative director, but Mary Post was a co-collaborative director, so she was also very involved in this project. And Kate Ellingson also was our data analyst for this particular project as well. So your new HAI reporting epidemiologist has moonlighted in other arenas as well. And so I'm going to invite both of them to provide comment if I miss or skip over anything. So the MDRO prevention collaboratives started after August 1st. That was our grant funding cycle. We had 3 different groups. We had the North Coast region that was really focused on Clatsop and Tillamook counties. This was an extension of the Astoria MDRO Prevention Collaborative that was actually launched a year prior. So they already had some background on this effort before we started with them, but their official duration for this project was October 2013 through July of 2014. And that was 2 assisted living facilities, 2 hospitals, and 2 nursing facilities. And then we had the Lynn-Benton region, which was Lynn and Benton counties. We weren't very creative with that particular name. We just called them what they were. And that was 1 emergency medical transport team, a hospital, a memory care unit, an outpatient clinic, and 3 nursing facilities. And they started in November of 2013 and finished up in July of 2014. And then the South Coast region, which was really Coos County, and that was 1 assisted living facility, 1 emergency transport team, and 3 hospitals and a nursing facility. They had a bit of a late start. They started in February 2014. Part of that was because there was some staff turnover at the hospital level. And the way that we went about recruitment for this particular project was we would reach out to a hospital and then have them identify the kind of key players that they worked with in their community. This project wasn't exclusive of any one facility type. So we encourage them to think about assisted living facilities, hospitals, nursing facilities, even emergency medical transport, not just EMS services, but also any voluntary rideshare type programs as well. And the ones who opted to participate in this effort were the ones that had the capacity at the time of program launch to be involved. So really it was kind of diverse groups for each region just based on who was identified and who actually had the ability to participate at the time.
What we collected on a monthly basis for this particular project was facility onset cases of C. diff and multi-drug resistant organisms. I am going to take all the credit for this, although Kate is the one who did all the data analysis, but she was kind enough to get all this information together. And so really when we're looking at patient and resident days, what we actually followed over the course of the collaborative across the three regions was over 104,000 patient and residence days. So we actually were able to see quite a bit of data come through for this project. Of that data, we did find that they identified 21 facility onset C. diff cases and 17 facility onset MDRO cases reported. Most of those were MRSA. You can see 15 were MRSA. There was one VRE and one cephalosporin resistant Klebsiella. I think that in general, people seemed to be more understanding of MRSA. They seemed to know what it was prior to starting the collaborative, so they may have had a better capacity to identify it. But again, maybe that's just more prevalent in their care setting. So that's kind of some of the data that we saw. One of the things we were trying to encourage throughout this process was to use a transfer form that did indicate MDRO status at time of transfer. So a lot of people had been pretty good about verbally doing this in the past, but as of January 1st, obviously this new rule went into effect that they should be also communicating in writing. And so we were trying to encourage compliance with that by having them not only use a transfer form, but also to track its use, which was really challenging for a lot of people, not only because maybe they didn't have a form to start with, but how do you actually track the form's use across facilities? So we did encourage them to do that. We had just over 1,600 patient transfers monitored during the course of the collaborative. And then hand hygiene, it's typically an easy metric for us to get information about, but we did want to monitor adherence to that as well, and there were over 7,000 opportunities observed for hand hygiene. I don't know if Kate, if you want to talk about this chart at all. This is a little bit out of my wheelhouse. Sure. I mean, the table that's on this handout basically just stratifies some of those metrics that Jess was talking about. So MDROs, CDI, hand hygiene, and transfer form adherence by facility type. I think one of the interesting things about this collaborative was that there were so many different types of facilities participating, and they all sort of experienced different challenges. So again, we didn't see any differences in MDROs reported by facility type. I think there were a lot of issues with some of the, especially some of the non-hospital settings in terms of actually tracking these infections. So I'm not sure how much credence we want to give to the data at this point, but we didn't see any significant differences there. We did see higher C. diff rates reported in hospital settings. Hand hygiene adherence here, it was mostly driven by hand hygiene observations in hospital settings because a lot of the hospitals already had ongoing programs, so they're doing, you know, hundreds of observations every month. So I think it's interesting to look at it by nursing facilities and assisted living. Their rates were a little bit lower, and I think in part of this is just because a lot of them weren't necessarily doing that as standard practice. And transfer form adherence was very interesting. We saw that the hospitals, a third of our participating hospitals were, 35% adherence in it. There were a couple of larger hospitals who had a hard time tracking this. A lot of it's because they have Epic systems that they're trying to figure out how to actually extract this information. And so for them, they had a lot harder time tracking transfers rather than the ALFs who were like, oh, we had 8 transfers and we had a form for 7 of them. So it was interesting though for long-term care facilities and ALFs. For some of them, they could track it well. And in general, nursing facilities also had some issues with tracking transfer forms. So.
And regarding the hand hygiene adherence, Kate had mentioned that hospitals have programs in place for quite a long time. And one of the other comments that we had heard from some of the long-term care settings is it's typically a closed-door setting for a lot of people. And I think there were some growing pains attached to, well, how do we audit in these settings when we're not actually in the room with them and they're performing their hand hygiene? So there were a lot of lessons learned there, a lot of creative strategies with people trying to just make sure they were getting their observations done. But again, that was a barrier that we heard, is just that the setting wasn't conducive to them actually performing these types of audits. So some of the takeaways from what we found is most of the facilities were able to report some data. We didn't expect that the emergency transport teams would be able to submit anything just because they're not really enmeshed in the facility setting. But there was one nursing facility that also did not submit data. There were few MDROs reported. This could either be a low incidence of MDROs at the facilities or maybe difficulties with detection. We were asking teams to use NHSN criteria for reporting facility onset. So based on maybe what they were doing in the past, this may have been different for them. Reported, and Kate went over some of these, so I'm not going to go through the takeaways specifically to the significance of the CDI and transfer form use and hand hygiene as well. One of the cool things that we were able to do with this collaborative is we also did a survey at the very end of the collaborative that was based on the CDC long-term care baseline assessment, but then we modified that slightly for hospitals and then added some of our own questions to really get at some of the meat of what we wanted to learn from our particular project. It was divided into six sections, including demographics, interfacility communication, infection identification and reporting, lab quality improvement, and barriers to implementation. We asked them to respond on these questions, both how their practice was before the collaborative started and then after. And then we also asked specifically for the infection preventionist or someone with a similar knowledge set to be the one to complete it, like somebody that was really kind of familiar with the facility's policies and practices regarding these. Again, that may not have always been the person that did it, but that's what we kind of asked for. And we did most of our questions either as a yes, no, unknown, as a Likert scale, maybe a scale of 1 to 5. There was one question that was like that. Some were open-ended and some were multiple choice, just depending on what kind of data we were trying to get at. Some of the takeaways from that was we did see a significant improvement in both written and verbal communication with receiving facilities around whether they have an active MDRO or C. diff infection, and also if they had a colonization. So we talked a lot about what's active, what's colonization, and then how do you inform the facilities about this. 53% of collaborative participants used a standard definition or algorithm to identify infections prior to the collaborative, and 87% used a standard definition afterwards. We did encourage them to use algorithms and criteria that we had put in place, so we hope that that's part of that, but really if they're using any standard definition, that was better than nothing, so we're grateful to see that improvement as well. There were some less common but high-risk MDROs that people seem to be more aware of, and they were doing improved targeted surveillance for that, so that was including the cephalosporin resistant Klebsiella and the CRE Klebsiella and CRE E. coli and the Acinetobacter as well. So you can see those improvement rates there. And for those of you on the line, I'm happy to send out this one page back in front as well if you want to see it, but Kate and I are in the process of working on a more comprehensive report that we will definitely share with people when we're done as well. The ability to implement surveillance for MDROs improved for facilities across the board. Patient isolation and environmental cleaning also improved, and it seemed like the non-hospital participants really benefited from the collaborative and being able to make these gains, maybe more so than some of our hospital partners. And some of the common barriers that were reported were that there was a lack of time. Obviously, everyone's really busy. We know people, also another barrier was being short-staffed. So we know those two things kind of work in tandem. If you don't have a robust staff, you're not gonna have enough time. And there were some other barriers that were reported, including the burden of data collection. Some people seemed confused about how to proceed with collaborative activities. And some of them felt like maybe they were a team of one. They weren't really getting the buy-in from some of their other support. So some of the things we alluded to earlier in the room. In general, really great feedback. I will say, you asked Mary the question about access to technology, and nobody reported lack of access to technology in this collaborative as a barrier. So that's good to know and probably bodes well for future projects as well. So like I said, this will be coming out in a more comprehensive report in the near future, but does anybody have any questions, or if Mary, if you have any add-ons, or Kate, if you have any add-ons? No?
I was a little bit curious about how, if you could elaborate on the tracking the interfacility transfer form,
sure.
what method you used, and who was involved, I guess, on both ends.
Right.
And such.
So this was fairly loose. When we initially started this project, what we really wanted to see was that facilities were using a standard form within their region. We found that this was somewhat impossible, and I think this is some of the feedback that came back in the interfacility meetings as well, is just some people like to go through a formal forms approval process, and they have certain things they need to be communicating. So we, at that point, allowed everybody to make sure they're including certain elements within their form, but they could essentially use their own forms. And really, it was up to them to track what they were doing. We were asking them to track the forms that they were sending, not necessarily the ones that they were receiving at their facility level, which we had some growing pains with that too, and I think if we were to reapproach this project, we would definitely figure out a different way to do that. But it was all self-reported, so it was essentially they had to come up with their own mechanisms. I think when you look at some of the hospital systems that were using an EMR and they were transferring maybe more patients, it could have been harder, whereas if you had a smaller facility like your assisted living facility and they were transferring three, it was much easier to go back and audit if they had a form that was completed. Did they have a copy in the resident chart and did it go out? So
would it be like you, an IP at one facility calls up an IP at the other to see if they received the form or something? Or
we did encourage them to do that due diligence to make sure that the forms were being received. How many of them actually did that?
I guess that's what I'm trying to understand with this adherence to transfer the form.
My understanding is that it literally is the self-reported attaching of a form.
Yeah.
Exactly, on the sending side. I mean, I didn't, maybe there was some, it wasn't my impression that they did, that was consistent across the board,
yeah,
that they actually called and confirmed.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing about that metric is I realized when I started looking at the data that, that everybody has a different interpretation of, you know, what an MDRO transfer, when it should be applied. So for some hospitals and long-term care facilities, they thought whenever any patient was transferred, MDRO or not, you put that form on, and if they don't have an MDRO, you just say no MDRO, and some of the forms have a place for that. Other facilities interpreted the law, which I think is kind of the literal interpretation, which is you put a form on if there's a patient that has an MDRO or CDI. And so their denominator, to me sometimes, for some of these facilities, was like number of patient transfers with MDRO rather than all transfers. So we tried to get all transfers for this metric to be consistent, but in that process I realized that there were just different interpretations.
And some of that again was with the three different regions and the partnership aspect, some decided to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, the North Coast decided they wanted to send interfacility transfer forms whether or not the patient had an MDRO, whether or not it was required, that they just would ensure that it's sent every time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes within the scope of the project, that sounded good at the start, but then as they started doing it, they realized, you know, that takes effort, let's maybe not. So sometimes within the collaborative, some of the plans changed.
Mm-hmm. I think the tough thing too is where each facility is tasked with making their own transfer form, that there aren't infection control experts, if you will, sometimes within each facility, and especially like when you're looking at those independent facilities, they don't have any guidance, and even with you know, my company, there's no one that yet at this point that said, oh, we should have a standardized transfer form, so every life care facility, you know, we have this MDRO transfer form, so that hasn't happened yet, which is unfortunate. But, you know, many facilities, you know, your infection control nurse is also your staff development person, also your central supply person, because they wear all these hats, and, you know, sometimes the hat's on backwards or, you know, hanging on a hook somewhere. And so then it's up to, know, other people to try to get that done. So I don't know how we fix that. Do we create that form and say, well, you'll use this one so that it's standardized? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a possibility.
Yeah, and we have a lot of examples that we provided. The CDC had a transfer form that they were using because North Coast was an extension of the Astoria project. They had a form that they were using really before we started launching this project, so we had their form as well. And then Clark County, there was a big initiative in Clark County to do something similar, and they developed them. A lot of them are loosely based on the same content, but it's just kind of what do you want to.
And then the hard part is, too, is, you know, if you're a facility and you're getting transfer forms from five hospitals, you get patients from five hospitals, mm-hmm. then you have five different forms
ones that you're looking at.
Your infection control nurse is also your staffing coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot for that one person to go through.
Yeah. one of the regions actually developed a sticker, which I thought was a really great idea, and I've seen these elsewhere, but they really took this on, and I think the regions that were maybe the most successful with this project were the ones that really tried to get feedback from everybody in the community, like, okay, as a receiving facility, what makes the most sense, like, what do you need to see? What do you need to see come through your door?
What do you want to know right away?
What do you want to know when you just first look at this? And they developed a sticker that essentially had little check boxes that they could check next to the different precautions that people should follow based on that patient, and they put all the materials in an envelope. And so that way, even if it was a volunteer who wasn't attached to the hospital or the facility that wasn't necessarily supposed to have access to patient information, they could still see what should I be doing to make sure I'm safe.
I should have on gloves and
right.
a mask.
And then if the patient didn't have anything, they just put a big X through the whole sticker. And that was a nice visual cue of, okay, I should probably pay attention to this versus I know that this patient's fine, but now I can do a bigger deep dig into this file to see what else I might need to have access to. So. Definitely interesting. Anything else in the room or for those of you on the line?
Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, thanks.
So it looks like we don't have any updates or representatives from the dialysis centers or ambulatory surgical centers. Is that correct? Okay. So it looks like we'll move on to Joan.
You don't have anything? Okay.
No,
okay.
Well, maybe would you mind, for my sake, as people are giving updates,
yes.
I kind of just wanted to hear a little bit about, you know, who you are and your position in your facility, just since I'm new here. So.
I'm the director of nursing of a long-term care facility in McMinnville, and so I was invited here because I participated in a couple other. Many things and so Life Care Centers of America is the company I work for. So I probably, it looks like in your thing there's a Tennessee Healthcare Association, so we may have, because our corporate offices are out of Tennessee, so I wouldn't doubt that there's probably some Life Care folks on that as well. So I feel very fortunate to be part of that very large corporation. So we're about 220 facilities, not all long-term care. We have, or not all skilled nursing, I should say. We have assisted living, hospice, and some other kinds of facilities. So.
And here, how many here in Oregon?
In Oregon, we only have three. So we're small here in Oregon. So. We're kind of, I feel like we're kind of the stepchildren out here. Because we're in Tennessee, all the wonderful things that get rolled out for our company, we get the last. So, but I was gonna say about the long-term care, having like internet access and that kind of thing, you know, we have to have electronic medical records and all those things that those all have to be in place by next year. And so we're forced to have more updated access and so I think that you will see us be able to participate at a higher level, I hope. But some of those things are going to have to be regulated and even with the infection control things, that's until we are told that we have to, there won't be people in place, like you said, you know, not having somebody, you know, with the turnover and everything, until it's regulated, it's not going to happen. And it's frustrating for somebody like me. I've been in my position for 4.5 years, so you know, I see that you know, when there's all that turnover and then things don't happen.
Yeah.
I happen to be fortunate that we have a pretty good staff that's been there for a while, so but it doesn't happen. And even in our other two Oregon facilities, they struggle, so.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Birthing centers, apparently there's no.
Yeah, I'm starting to think this might end up being a short meeting because it also looks like the, Diane, are you still on the line? Did you have an update?
No, not really, I'm still on the line, but no update today.
Yeah, I just noticed that on the agenda, okay. I guess on, in terms of any of these agenda items, though, does anyone have anything that they'd like to say with long-term care or ASCs or any kind of pressing issues that we're not aware of.
And Diane, just for my own knowledge, you're the director, is that correct, of the Hospital Association?
So I am a clinical person, a nurse by training, so I run the quality program in the Hospital Association. So I'm the Vice President of Quality and Clinical Operations. So we're working with hospitals on performance improvement projects, which may or may not include infection-related efforts. Okay?
Dates, or would you like to introduce yourself? Let's make that all right. We're Acme Trial, and we're formerly the QIO. This feels weird not to say it anymore.
So she has to say it.
So I have to say it. The CMS is, we just started the Levels Scope of Work with CMS. And that started August 1st, and it's a 5-year contract now. CMS has decided to regionalize QIO program, so I gave some handouts.
Oh, you did? All these things, okay. Yeah.
All the different tasks and how the QIO programs are organized now through the QINs, and the QINs are the regional components. Like, we work for Health Insight now, which is a 4-state QIN.
Okay.
And the QIOs are underneath, so each state is working as a QIO. So Oregon is working as a QIO for this Health Insight QIN.
So Acumetra is as a QIO, but you're not supposed to say QIO or something?
Technically we're not a QIO anymore.
Okay.
So if we were a Health Insight, if we were actually a part of Health Insight, we'd be a QIO.
Okay.
And the other states that we're working with through Health Insight are Utah, Nevada, and Mexico.
And they're all part of this?
The Health Insight, they're part of the QIN. So Health Insight is the QIN. So that's the parent. And the QIOs are the states that will be performing the work under the regional QIN. QIOs.
But is there still, so you're not officially the QIO, is there another QIO then that's Oregon or no?
We're doing the work of the QIO.
But it's some kind of, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's just a structure that, that CMS put in place. So
yeah, I can relate to things like that.
We just didn't decide to become Health Insight. We wanted to maintain our autonomy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the work in Utah, Nevada, and New Mexico, does it differ? Like, is each state working on their own individual projects, or is it essentially all the states are trying to do a similar focus?
For HAI work, we're all working on the same things. There's CLAPC, CAUTI, and CDI. We'll be focusing on PAE, but mainly just education and getting people up to speed on the definitions and NHSA reporting. But we really won't be tracking or performing any measurement improvement activities with PAE.
Yeah, the QIN or functional QIO, do you guys interact with the health engagement networks or as part of partnership?
We're collaborating as much as possible. CMS has directed us all to not duplicate work.
I'm wondering if Diane, do you want to say anything about, just to let everyone know about the health engagement networks or anything in that direction? If you're still on the line.
So, Zins, this is Diane, if you were speaking to me, you were really breaking up, didn't get that at all.
Oh, so I was just curious not in terms of a formal update, I know you don't have anything like that, but just in terms of what very quick overview of what some of the work that you guys are working on? Or
in partnership for patients.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm sorry, the sound is awful, so I get half of what you just said.
Okay, we were just trying to figure out, the question came up in terms of the HANS and whether what kind of interaction they might have with the QIN, et cetera, and I guess we're wondering if there are any thoughts in terms of how these organizations might work together in the future.
on the HACCS? Is that what you'd ask?
I think, Diane, this is Lori. I think he's referring to the work that you're doing with the partnership for patients and the AGI.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry, I couldn't hardly hear part of that. How about for next time? Would that be fine?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But yeah.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense.
You bet.
Great.
And maybe just put it in an email to me so I will be prepared.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I think I can say the partnership for patients officially ends December 8th. Is that right, Diane? Okay. Anyway.
Anyway, so, yeah.
That may or may not happen.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. That's just for general context. And so we'll be working on the same topics.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
And they've changed the metrics now, so they're not working on rates any longer. They're working on the SIR.
Okay.
So that'll be a change.
Okay.
It's interesting working with a big group now with Health Insights. So
yeah,
we're all coordinating and trying to share resources.
Okay. Well, I don't think we really have any public people here, right? So.
And Mary, you're the you're.
Well, actually, yeah, I've been in infection control for a long time. I've worked in long-term care and legacy in Providence, and now I'm at Kaiser. And Janet asked me if I would consider joining this group if it was appropriate to represent hospital infection control.
Exactly. So Janet used to be part of this group, and she was actually served as the chair as well. Mary's a very respected IP. Has been here for a long time.
Been around for a while.
Excellent. Well, I think that's everything on the agenda. The one thing we kind of didn't talk about today, but maybe we can do next time, was this sort of in the back of your handout packet, you have just sort of it's like a CDC template for how to very succinctly display state data. So it's kind of, I think it's on two pages. I think, at the end of the day, it'll be sort of a one-pager front and back color printout to kind of summarize the year's data. So you guys have this here, and I think we'd like to work towards this and, complementing the executive summary. And we can solicit more comments and feedback at our next meeting, but I wanted you guys to be aware of that.
I feel like this is a lot more digestible on the consumer level than just something visual and infographic.
Yeah, I completely agree with that picture there, actually. I haven't even really, I've been focusing so much on these, these numbers, and I think that is nice. So.
Well, thank you all for attending and taking the time to meet with you. We'll look forward to seeing you next time, and I think we'll be sending out the minutes before the next meeting, which is scheduled for December 17th.